What will be the most limiting factor in the peanut production in the future? And what's being done, what research is being done about it now to take care of it for the future?
Okay, we'll start with the entomology, go to the pathology, then we'll address the agronomics.
Yeah, I guess I sound like a broken record, but the biggest factor in management, and I'm confining it to insects here, because that's what I've been asked to do, but in terms of insect management, the best thing we have going for us is water and irrigation. The major insect problems we have are related to drought stress, and so it's in terms of future challenges, it's all about water management and the availability of water. Not everybody's got irrigation, but you can do a lot with it in terms of insect management if you've got it.
I might address that, too, just a little bit. I sound like a broken record, too, because, honestly, our biggest limiting factor right now really is research and extension support, not from the university itself, just simply from the fact that we, in the Southeast, we do not have a full-time research entomologist on peanuts at this point in time, John. And I know that I'm part-time and I enjoy what I'm doing, but the information gap is, it didn't really strike me the first couple of years I was back into this position working on insects, but over the last 4 years, the information gap is getting very, very wide, and it's very difficult to play catch-up on research when it comes to management. New varieties, we have new varieties, yet we don't know how they respond to certain insects. Three-cornered alfalfa hopper would be a prime example. We're seeing a shift, and we think that these new varieties actually have more resistance to three-cornered alfalfa hopper than the old ones, but we don't really have research to back that up. And in answer to, in kind of responding to what Jay had here, as far as drought, lesser cornstalk borer is one of our major problems that we've had one or two insecticides over the last 30 years that actually we don't have any soil insecticides coming on the market. We don't see them coming on the market, and we've been relying heavily on one or two insecticides, which if you get 60 or 70% control of any soil insects, you're doing quite well. But we have other chemistries coming out on foliage feeders and so forth that are dramatically good, excellent. And so I guess I could go on and on, but I don't want to, except that's the limiting factor, I think, is the information gap that's occurring right now.
From disease management, limiting factors, Dr. Brennan and Dr. DeFall.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll go first, and I'm relatively new to the peanut field here. But one thing I guess I've kind of seen in plant pathology and thing to keep in mind for these diseases in general is usually fungicide resistance, and we just need to pay attention to how effective our fungicides are now and how they're changing through the years. And you know, as long as new chemistry come, you'll have something to control your diseases in the future, but you know, how quickly these chemistries come out and how effective they are could be different from what we've seen in the past. So it's important to maintain, I would say, an IPM program, trying to do a broad management program, looking at those frac codes, your mode of action with your fungicides, and try to mix them up through the seasons to try not to have resistance come too quickly.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, I would echo both of those comments, but particularly the need for continued research and education and technology. You know, I started in 1986, and we had a book called The Package Approach to Growing Peanuts. Frank McGill, his colleagues did a great job. We had a program that worked. You look at our package we have now, it's completely different. We've changed just about everything in there. Some of the fundamental biology is the same, obviously, that adapting to new things like spotted wilt has changed completely how we actually grow the crop. What's going to be the next spotted wilt? I don't know. Clearly, to me, I'm not a big global warming guy, but I think there's something to climate change, obviously. You look at the environmental conditions we're facing. You know, this year, the heat we've had in the spring, it changes the disease spectrum we're facing. CBR is about gone. Limb rot's about gone. Aspergillus niger's emerging, white mold's emerging, nematodes are emerging. All these biological systems respond to this type of change. we've got to respond in how we deal with them and keep meeting those new demands. And the only way to do that is continued research, development, the strong programs we've had in the past.
All right, and I'll pose it to our group of agronomists, Mike Howell, Chris Balcom, Glenn Harris, and Scott Tubbs. If they'll each just make a comment of what each one of them see as limiting factors, then we'll move on to additional questions.
One of the things that we're seeing over in Mississippi is the constant change in acreage, and that's directly proportional to the change in price. We keep seeing these peaks and valleys in price and acreage, and if we could figure out a way to kind of balance that out with some of our other crops that we're growing and get that on a more stable playing field over the long term, I think that would really help us out in terms of getting new producers, getting more acreage in Mississippi.
Of course, Alabama being predominantly dry land, I think one of the things that they mentioned earlier about the pest management, when you talk about irrigation and how that eliminates a lot of the pest problems, I think that's one of the things there that we try to work toward through our legislators is getting more water there available for the farmers to use. In Alabama, we have a lot of water. It's just a lot deeper, a lot different type system than what you see in Georgia. But that could, with some help there, we could really change the way our agricultural production is in Alabama. We can see those consistently higher yields and make the flow of all their pesticides and everything work a lot better. The other thing, I think, from maybe a breeding standpoint, just the importance in breeding and what all that could do for us. I think you can see a little different plateau of where we're at with these varieties, these higher yield varieties, that what we're seeing from those and the different type of traits that they can put in those varieties that can really change our production.
Again, as far as fertilizers, I would say calcium is the issue. I'm not sure as far as a limiting factor, because really we have a lot of different sources of calcium we can use, lime, gypsum, even some soluble forms of calcium we're looking at putting through the pivot. We're focusing on timing. And really when we shifted from, in Georgia, when we shifted from the small-seeded Georgia green to the large-seeded runners, it focused a lot of attention, and that's the biggest thing, just getting folks' attention to know how important calcium is. So hopefully it won't be the limiting factor.
Most limiting factor is going to obviously depend on situation from grower to grower. But there is no magic bullet in production, but if the closest thing I would say we can get to a magic bullet that would cover a lot of different pest issues, pests being general, broad across the board, would be rotational. And, a good rotation, understanding rotations and understanding the benefits that a rotation can have can be, in some ways, a magic bullet for a lot of different pest incidences. And since Dr. Prosco is the only weed scientist on the panel up here, I guess from a rotational standpoint, I'll also talk. I saw a grower's field last year. One half of the pivot had 2 pigweed in it. The other half of the pivot had probably 200 pigweed in it. And the only thing I got from the farmer was that the difference between one half of the pivot was that it was in corn the previous year, the other half of the pivot was in cotton the previous year. So from a rotational standpoint, we know what the benefits can be from a rotational standpoint from just a yield perspective, but from a weed control aspect, I would say that rotation can play a huge role in helping to control a lot of these issues.